Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to this latest edition of the Cyril Gerald Quinn Sports Podcast on this 14th of March, 2017. As we discuss the world of sports and pop culture, as always, call number is 347-215-6180. As we get ready for the NCAA tournament. Now, again, all due respect to Mount St. Mary's and New Orleans and Wake Forest and Kansas State, but the real tournament begins on Thursday. Though I do, Wake Forest is a pretty good team. And I don't think Wake Forest should be playing on a play-in game, to be honest with you. I think I watched a lot of ACC basketball. Wake Forest is actually a pretty good team with a guy in John Collins who's going to be, could be a lottery pick. So, you know, they got a raw deal with that. But we'll be breaking down the brackets in the next, probably around 8:15 or so, we'll be joined by Javon Alford, who will help me, well, will join us in terms of breaking down the brackets. He'll give us his Final Four picks. I already have my Final Four picks. Done about four brackets, but I'll give you the one that I take the most, put the most thought into and took more serious, though there are some other brackets with some financial incentives that could be awaiting if I play my cards right. But that's neither that is neither here nor there. Before we get started with the brackets, a couple of things of housekeeping things. Number one, you had Ezekiel Elliott just doing what football players in the offseason do, and that's just stupid act. You're on camera. We had a parade celebration, a St. Patrick's celebration, and, you know, in front of, in essence, millions in terms of the Twitter world and Instagram world and what have you, and, you know, pull a girl's shirt down, something that she probably has no problem, you know, doing herself, because clearly, you know, so I didn't get, you know, what his line of thought was. You know, I don't care how cool him and the young lady are. It's not the point. But the bottom line is, and I don't expect the NFL to take any major action. You know, he might get a phone call, a heads up, somebody, getting to his ear. But I don't expect there to be any anything from Mr. Goodell in terms of the conduct code. But here's the thing. These players in the NFL just – Bob have way too much time on their hands. The NFL, out of all the sports, as you know, has the longest off season. So, you know, your season can end from anywhere from the end of December or February, regardless of how far you make the playoffs, or if you don't make the playoffs at all. Is a very short, very long off season. I mean, you're talking about going from March in essence to March to July. I mean, even you do OTAs, even you count OTAs and some of those team, you know, the team trainers that the guys, you know, that these teams do, still a lot of time on your hands. And, you know, a guy like Ezekiel Elliott, 21, 22 years old, Dallas, wherever, you know, one of the best players on the team that, so-called America's team, hasn't shown good judgment in terms of his short career. He already has, you know, a harassment case that's pending that the NFL is looking into. So, you know, I'm kind of not surprised by this, to be honest with you, but it's something, again, it's something that is going to be rampant in the NFL in this offseason, in this offseason from now to the time till July. Again, these guys have nothing but time on their hands. There's only so much video you can watch, so many weights you can lift, So it's just, you know, the guys are going to get in trouble. And, you know, if you're NFL, you know, what can you do? But hit them with the hammer, you know, if they do something stupid. I don't, these guys are grown men. You know, got to be able to handle themselves off the field. But, again, I don't expect nothing to come out of this from in terms of any fines or any games missed. But just something to be aware of, especially if you're a Cowboy fan, that this guy has already in his short career developed a pattern of putting themselves in a position where to do stupid things. And this was not, this was one of them without question. 347-215-6180 is your call number on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. Of course, Kirk Cousins' name will not stay out of the media, especially in the DMV, just down this area. Allegedly, apparently he talked with the Redskin brass, Daniel Snyder, Bruce Allen, and tried to inquire whether or not, you know, he was going to be traded, where he was going to be traded. He was going to be traded. I don't expect him. He should be traded. He should be traded. But it's going to be interesting to see what they do. You know, if you're another team, you're San Francisco, and now Cleveland has emerged as a possible trade destination for Kirk Cousins. If you're another team, there's no reason to trade for him right now. I'm looking at San Francisco. I'm looking at Cleveland. If you just wait a year, you can get him for nothing without giving up any draft picks. Now, I know Cleveland's going to have a boatload of picks with some of the moves that they made, especially with this Houston trade where they got, you know, Brock Osweiler and some cash. And his cap, basically his cap number for extra draft pick, which was, you know, a good move, a smart move by that on their part. What's the difference? They don't, you know, they have a bunch of cap. They had $100 million in cap space that they're not going to be able to spend. Why not pick up an extra pick? He's not going to be able to, you know, I don't think Osweiler is going to start the season with the Browns. So they're going to probably try to move him. He'll be on the move again as well. So that was a smart move by the Browns. But again, if you're the Browns of San Francisco, why not wait a year? Because there's no way. Listen, the Redskins are not going to franchise Kirk Cousins after this season. Not going to sign him for 30. Which, if they did, they would have to sign him. They would have to give him another raise, in upwards of about 44%. I mean, he would have to be. He would make around $35 million. That's not going to happen. So if you're the Browns, if you're Cleveland, or if you're another team after the season that has a quarterback need, which they always are in the NFL, wait until the season's over, see how he plays. You know, he can stay healthy, or he can produce at a high level and go from there. As far as the Washington Redskins, you know, you either shit or get off the pot. I mean, you either trade him or sign him to a long-term deal. Again, I've said this the entire offseason, I'll continue to say it. They cannot go through another offseason. They cannot go through another season with him being on the franchise tag and answering the same questions of last season about whether or not they're going to franchise or whether or not they're going to sign him long term. I'm not even going to get into everything that transpired since we last spoke about the Washington football team, because it would just take up basically the entire show. And, you know, everybody knows what's going on. You know the dysfunction that's existed for the past 25 years. I would just say this. I compare the Redskins to Pookie off New Jack City. Like, they just can't get right. Even when you have a general manager who's one of the better general managers in the league in terms of talent evaluator, you find a way to run him out of town and then try to disgrace his name on top of it by, you know, trying to expose what was clearly obvious, that the guy has personal issues. So I'm not, listen, they are who they are. So at the end of the day, this is what they've been for the last 25 years. And there's no reason why, with Daniel Snyder being the owner, that this is going to change anytime soon. 347-215-6180. Just getting started here on the latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We will be talking about the NCAA tournament. We'll break down the brackets. Again, I've done about 3 or 4 brackets. We'll see what, you know, we'll see what Javon Offer thinks. That's coming up, and much, much more on this latest edition of the Cyril Joe Quinn Sports Podcast. We'll be right back. Thank you. 347-215-6180 is the call number. Mount St. Mary's, New Orleans is tied at 49, about midway through the second half. Again, this is the first four, something that was started a few years ago. I don't think Wake Forest should be playing in this game tomorrow. I mean, tonight. They'll play Kansas State following this game. I thought Wake Forest probably should have been in the tournament, should have been, was a little bit better than this, but they are forced to play against Kansas State. Also, a couple things outside of the NCAA tournament that were going on. So Golden State sits out their players on Saturday night in a nationally televised game against the San Antonio Spurs. Again, a game in which the Spurs are tailor-made. The Spurs invented sitting out players and still succeeding. Like, Golden State is not – every team is not built to do that. The Spurs can do that. The Spurs, again, of course, were not sitting out players as Kawhi Leonard has suffered a concussion in the Oklahoma City game on Thursday. And LaMarcus Aldridge is out with a irregular heartbeat, heart arrhythmia, which, you know, they hope is not serious. But anytime you're talking about something with the heart, you have to take it very seriously. Hopefully, Aldridge will be able to resume playing, but who knows with that. So Golden State decided, you know, that would be a chance to sit out their players and maybe even pick up a victory. They sat out Iguodala, Green, Curry, and also Klay Thompson, and rightfully so, are taking a lot of heat for it. Now, Steve Kerr claims that, you know, he consulted with the training staff, and they have reached a point where he felt like basically that they were putting the players' health in terms of injuries in jeopardy. With this long road trip, 8 games in 13 days, back-to-backs. The Warriors will fly more miles than any team in the NBA because not only do they play on the West Coast, but they are on they are the most televised team along with Cleveland. They play on more nationally televised games than anybody in the league, so it makes sense from that standpoint. But here's the thing, you know, I have yet to see it proven that resting these players prevents injuries. I've yet to see any kind of data that proves that. Again, I grew up watching basketball, and whether it was in the late 80s, throughout the 90s, in the early 2000s, this type of stuff just did not exist. Guys, you didn't rest players. It didn't happen. And I'm not just talking about Michael Jordans and the guys, Karl Malones of the world and John Stockton. I'm just talking about regular, just your rank and file players. Everybody played. Unless you were injured, you played. A lot of these guys have been conditioned to feel like that they have to take nights off, or they have to get rested, or they'll get hurt. I really think this is a mental thing. That is a mental aspect, that component to this, that, you know, you put in that, like, you know, again, these athletes, basketball players, have been coddled so much that I think they're starting to believe it. That, hey, if I don't get enough rest, or if I don't sit out this amount of games, except if your name is Russell Westbrook, who's, you know, just a cyborg. Outside of that, I think most of these guys just believe that they have to sit out games. I mean, teams now have gotten so bold that they, you know, Cleveland didn't even travel. I mean, they told LeBron, Kevin Love, and Kyrie, hey, stay home. Don't even travel. So it's getting a little ridiculous, something that the NBA is going to have to address in the very near future. We're now joined by Javon Alford, Real GM, for the NFL. He will help us break down this NCAA tournament. Javon, what's going on?
How you doing, man? I'm glad to be on. Like you said, talking some NCAA tournament. We got the 216 seed playing right now, so it's a great time in basketball.
Yeah, Javon, what are your thoughts? Before we get into the bracket, were you happy with the seedings and with who got in, who didn't get in? What are your thoughts about that, in particular Syracuse, who didn't get in?
I know there was a there's a lot of, you know, people upset about Syracuse, and obviously, you know, if you want to say, well, if you look back the last season, it was kind of like they were in the same predicament last season, because you remember they were just one of the last couple teams to get in last season, and they go on this miraculous run. They upset Dayton, go to the Final Four, all that jazz. But I didn't really see no issue with them not getting in. I mean, when you look at their record in the ACC, it really wasn't, you know, it wasn't that good where you could say, oh, well, we can, you know, they have a legitimate case that they should get in. When, if you think about it, they don't have a legitimate case to get in, because if you, for example, put in a Syracuse who was only 18-14 and 10-8 in the ACC, and then you're going to have mid-majors like Illinois State who say, hold up, we should be in too, because we have a better record than these guys, but you're putting a power conference over us. So I don't see nothing wrong with it. I mean, they didn't really have any impressive out-of-conference wins, so that definitely hurts them. And then down the stretch, they really wasn't that good either. Down the stretch, they didn't really hold court, lost to Louisville twice and lost to Miami. If you want to make a statement to the committee, you had the lead split against Louisville and then get that win against Miami. Have quality signature wins that you couldn't pick up out-of-conference.
How about the thought that, and they did have a lot of losses, 14 losses, but how about the thought that when you compare their resume to some of the other teams that did make it, that barely made it, where it's a USC, a Providence, a Xavier, that they clearly had the better of the resumes as far as top 50 wins. They had six. They played in by far and away the best conference in the country, which they were 10-8. And let's be honest, and this is something that the NCAA does not take into account, that over the last 5 years, they've been in a Final Four, they've been into a couple Final Fours, they've been to a Elite Eight. So when they've gotten in, for the most part, they've produced at a high level. How about those factors as far as trying to make a case for them?
No, that's a great point. Like you said, you pointed out USC, who we heard for a couple weeks they were on the bubble, and obviously they're going to be one of the teams. Looking at my bracket, they're going to be one of the teams playing in the first round games, if I'm not mistaken. I'm trying to find it on my bracket.
Yes, they play tomorrow. Play tomorrow.
Yeah, they're at the top. Yep, against Providence. So, like you see, you have those matches where it's like, okay, whoever wins, you're going to have to play another game. And you mentioned Xavier, and that's a very interesting case too, because we saw Xavier only 21-13, but just like Syracuse, kind of fell off the bandwagon really hard. I mean, late in the season, you see them go on a 6-game losing streak, and they were losing the tournament teams: Marquette, Butler, Seton Hall, Villanova. I mean, Creighton just recently in the Big East tournament. So there, I can see why people are saying that, because when you look at a Xavier team, they really weren't that hot. They really weren't that hot down the stretch, and they have injury problems, because they're without their best player in Edmund Sumner. So they're without him. So you think, okay, well, how did they get in and not have to play in the first four? In the first four games, and they get a seed, and that's the tough thing, because then you can look at Syracuse and say, okay, well, Syracuse can look at Wake Forest, who's also in their conference, and they got in, but they're playing the fourth, and they're playing. Who is Wake Forest playing? They're playing in the first four games against Kansas State, so
yeah,
it's so confusing. Yeah, it's so confusing on what the committee wants every year. It's something different.
Yeah, I'm glad you bring up that point, because that's a very important point, because I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm looking at, well, Syracuse RPI is 84, but their BPI is 31. Like, that doesn't make sense. What sense does that make to me? There's so many, the committee's gotten to a point, and this has been brought up on numerous programs as far as got people breaking down the tournament, and it's a fair point. They've gotten to a point to where these decisions are kind of decisions of metrics and analytics instead of basketball decisions. Like, don't give me RPI, BPI, you know, strength of schedule, all these other metrics and analytics. Can you just look at the team and say, hey, is that team one of the best 68 or not?
Right.
Like, it shouldn't be that simple. But, like, to me, I think that they've gotten so, again, there are too many metrics that these committee members are looking at. It's almost, I mean, I feel bad for the committee because you give me all this information to crunch, and it's like, okay, you know, I might crunch all these numbers and have Syracuse out, but you ask anybody in the tournament, like, they're happy, but there's a lot of people probably happy that Syracuse is not in with the threat that they could knock them out on a neutral floor.
Yeah, no, you're definitely right. And like you said, don't give us RPI, BPI, and throwing all the analytics out here to confuse us. Like you said, can we just look at it from a strict basketball point? Can we look at these teams and say, okay, if we put these two teams on a neutral floor, what's going to happen? And I think that's a good point. I mean, what probably gave a Wake Forest an edge over a Syracuse was that, well, I can't say that because Wake lost to Syracuse earlier this year. So it's kind of tough seeing how they want to go about these things. Like you said, they give us strength of schedule. They give us all these metrics. But can you just break it down and say, okay, out of conference, they played these teams. They held their own. In conference, this is what they did. Let's match it up and just go like that. There's no reason to, you know, get into all these different things because then coaches now in the offseason, they're trying to maneuver and schedule in and who should I schedule? Who do I want to schedule? Who do I don't want to face? It just becomes more of a scheduling thing than a metric thing than the actual game on the court.
Well, before we get into the brackets, I'll leave it at this as far as that goes. If you are, we might differ, but I think Syracuse should have been in. But if you're Illinois State and you're a team of that ilk, you just have to go outside. You have to play people. I mean, that's bottom line. You have to go on the road. You have to play at, you know, you have to play at a Duke or you have to play at North Carolina, whoever. You have to play at one of these bigger teams. That's all. So you have to play quality games, quality ones.
Yeah.
You have to play quality teams on the road. Because nobody's coming to your gym. You're not a big enough program. Teams don't want to risk that, you know, teams don't like traveling to play these smaller schools at their own gyms. They only want to play them either at home or on a neutral floor. So if you're
right.
Team like Illinois
or in a preseason tournament, one of those type of things.
Strict schedule. Right, right. Those teams, at this point, I think that's one thing the committee has been consistent on the last 3 or 4 years, that they don't care how gaudy your record is. If you're Illinois State, you have to play people. You have to play people. Your non-conference strength of schedule has to be up there to compensate for a weak conference, in which clearly Illinois State was in this year in terms of it being a weak conference. And so was, I mean, to a lesser extent, so was, I mean, again, which the people were criticizing Wichita State. And there was some talk that Wichita State might not, if they had lost the conference tournament, which I don't believe, may not even made the tournament, which, I would have found that hard to believe considering their
right,
because
you look at their out-of-conference schedule.
Right. So we're gonna get into the bracket. Are you fine with the four number one seeds? There was some late talk, and I didn't kind of get it. I'm trying to be as unbiased as possible as a North Carolina fan. But there was some late talk that Duke deserved the number one seed over North Carolina. I'm like, I think Duke is the most talented team, and I have no problem with them being the biggest favorites to win it all. But they were, 11-7. They had a very uneven. They had an uneven year, versus a team that won the conference by two games. So I thought that the committee. It sounds like the committee, that wasn't even an issue. Like they said, the committee said they didn't make it past UCLA, Kentucky or Arizona as a top number two seed. So did you have any issues with the number ones, or were you fine with the number one seeds?
I think the number ones were fine. I mean, when you just look at three out of the four, those three in Villanova, Kansas, Gonzaga, those teams were literally in that 1-4 range in the polls the entire season. So I didn't have no problem with it. Villanova handled their business in the Big East. They got it done. Gonzaga, they only have one blemish on their record. They got it done in their conference tournament. Kansas, they got it done. Yeah, they got bounced early by TCU, but that doesn't matter because they handled their business over on UNC. Like, you know, UNC. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Without Josh Jackson, and they, that's how they lost. If Josh Jackson is playing, it's a whole different story. Maybe they win. They probably do win. Then that changes the whole scenario. But they'll still, they were still going to be number one seed regardless. And like you said, UNC definitely deserved it. You can't put Duke there, even though, you know, Duke did what they did in the ACC tournament. You can't put them here because, like you said, it's been a very uneven season and a very uneven team. They're talented. They got the talent. You know, they got the Harry Giles, Jason, the Tatums, and the Kennards, and Grayson Allen. They got those guys, but you wanted you can attest to this by watching them play. You know, you don't know what Duke team you're going to get. Are you going to get the Duke team that will, you know, compete or ball out, or are you going to get the Duke team that has to, that had to struggle to beat Wake Forest and lost in Cameron to NC State?
No question. We'll start at the East bracket. Let's put Villanova ahead, whoever, you know, that this team, these two teams, Mount St. Mary's and New Orleans, you know, thanks for playing. Thanks, you'll be able to hang up. You'll be able to hang up an NCAA tournament banner 2017. So we're going to put Villanova ahead. Second matchup should be more intriguing, though, that Wisconsin-Virginia Tech game. What are your thoughts?
Mm-hmm.
Who you like in that game to meet Villanova in the second round? Excuse me, well, in the second round.
This was a tough one for me. I was really battling back and forth with myself saying, okay, because 8 and 9 is just historically are always costless. I'm sitting there, I'm just like, okay, Virginia Tech, they really had a good game in the ACC. They really did good, you know. Their leading scorer is averaging 60 games in a day, but he's coming off the bench, and you're just like, can Virginia Tech keep up the scoring clip that they have against the Wisconsin team that's very veteran laden? I mean, Bronson Koenig, Nigel Hayes, Ethan Happ, who a lot of people, you know, were saying during the season, he's probably one of the better Big Ten players in the conference, you know. And I battled back and forth with it, but I went overall with Wisconsin in that game. I think just their defense, that stifling defense. I mean, when they clamp down, it's the done deal. They're ranked 7th in the nation in points allowed. And when you have that on your side going into the tournament, you can be in a lot of games and win a lot of games as well. So I like Wisconsin in that game. And, you know, well, like we said, for the 16th seed, you know, thanks for participating. Virginia Tech, this is a great step for the program that they can hopefully use to become a higher seed in the next season. But I think they're just running up against a team in Wisconsin who, you know, even though they struggled late in the year, they, you know, they're a very senior-laden team. They know how to get the job done. You know, they want to get that taste out of their mouth losing to Michigan. They want to get that taste. They want to get rid of that.
So we both agree. I like Wisconsin in that game. I think that, again, 8-9s can be toss-ups, but they also can be a situation where you're looking at the matchup. And I think this is going to show through a lot in this tournament. Veteran-laden teams. Wisconsin is one of the very few veteran-laden teams in terms of major programs that has seniors as their best players. We see a lot of these programs have – we talk about Duke. We talk about Kentucky. They have a lot of those teams are freshman and sophomore-led. Wisconsin is a senior, junior-led team. I like those teams. I always pay attention to. I give a little edge to in a matchup like that when it's basically a toss-up. So Villanova, Wisconsin, we like to meet in the that second round. Virginia, UNC, Wilmington. A lot of people have this as an upset special in terms of UNC, Wilmington, Virginia. Kind of got together at the end of the season. We know what they are defensively, but they have problems. And what's cost them in tournaments in the past is they just can't score in big spots. What are your thoughts now about Virginia in this particular matchup? Do you see a possible potential for an upset?
I'm calling an upset. I'm calling a stone cold lock.
Okay.
I like UNC Wilmington in this game because, like you said, Virginia, they can play defense with the best of them. I mean, that's not been Tony Bennett's problem. Who isn't his ring, his time there. But like you said, it's just putting the ball in the basket and actually getting some offense. I mean, you watch a ton of ACC games. Virginia likes to keep the score low. They like to get down and dirty with scores getting up in the 40s and the 50s. They don't want to get into a high scoring affair. And I think that's what they're going to run in with a team like UNC Williamson, who, you know, we've seen them give Duke a fight last year in the tournament, and that same crew's coming back again. I mean, this team, they can score the basketball. I think they're averaging about 85.2 points per game. They got four players averaging 10-plus points. They're back with Chris Clemens and C.J. Bryce, who just been phenomenal for them this season. I think that's a perfect upset. I think it won't be a blowout, but I think it's going to be a very close game where you could see somebody's going to hit that tough shot, and will Virginia finally come through? That's going to be the question.
All right, I have Virginia in that game, but I definitely I haven't seen a lot of UNC Wilmington. I do remember from last year that they played. You bring that up, that they played Duke very well in the tournament. I liked how Virginia actually was playing down the stretch. They had a big win over North Carolina. They have some guys that have been in the tournament last year. I think Bennett is a tremendous coach. I think they're kind of due to get past this kind of first round and make a little run here. So I think that'd be very interesting to watch them. I like them in this game. East Tennessee State, Florida. Probably had to like Florida in this matchup, wouldn't you say?
Florida. I like Florida in this matchup. They did well this year in the SEC, handled their business. I don't see them getting upset by the Buccaneers of East Tennessee State.
So that takes us to the Final Four that we have. So I have Villanova. And before we get to that, we can go down to SMU, SMU, the winner of Providence, USC. I watched a few SMU games. I'm very impressed by them. A lot of people are calling for them to be possibly a sleeper to get to the Final Four. Are you that high on them? What are your thoughts about SMU? We both expect that they will get past either Providence or USC in terms of the winner of that play-in game.
Yeah, I don't have SMU getting to the Final Four. I think they will get to the Elite Eight, the Sweet 16. Then they will get to the Sweet 16. I like how they play. They're a very tough team. They can score. They can rebound and defend. I mean, when you got all those combinations working in your favor and you're led by a guy with Semi Ojale, I mean, he's doing amazing things. They're the hottest team in the country. I mean, I've seen them play, I want to say, a couple of weeks ago against UConn, and, man, that team, they will put up a fight. They're tough. They're hard-nosed. And that's what you need in this tournament. And they got playmakers too, including Shake Milton, who, you know, he's been mentioned and around, you know, NBA circles as a possible prospect along with Semi. So I think SMU can make a run. I think a Sweet 16 will be where it ends, but they should be fun to watch.
So Baylor, we both like Baylor of New Mexico State. So we'll be looking at a Baylor SMU matchup. How about South Carolina and Marquette? Sort of a toss-up game here, 7-10. They've been pulled a lot up there. Been some upsets in 7-10 in past years. What about Marquette and South Carolina? We know this is not a vintage Marquette team. They've had some better teams in past years, but still. Pretty good team. South Carolina had a nice year to make the tournament. What are your thoughts about this matchup?
I got Marquette in this game, and it's because they're one of the best 3-point shooting teams in the country. And if that three ball is falling for them, things are going to be pretty for them. And as for South Carolina, can they score the basketball? That's going to be a question for them. And you know, even though you know Wisconsin Marquette. They're not very good on defense because, obviously, when you shoot a lot of threes, you leave yourself open, you know, runouts and everything like that. But the three ball's on. I think they can pull out this game. I mean, we've seen them beat Villanova earlier this season by knocking down a three-pointer. I mean, Marcus Howard, the freshman, he's been outstanding. Caton Reinhart, he's been outstanding for them as well. He's from USC. So I like Marquette in this game. It should be another fun game. And Marquette, all you need is that three ball to drop. They're shooting 43% as a team from distance. So if they get that drop in, it's going to be a long day for Frank Martin and company.
Bill, so my final four for this bracket, I have Villanova, Florida, SMU, Duke. You have Villanova. You have Villanova. Who you have? You have Villanova,
Florida
as well?
Mm-hmm.
You have Florida?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. So you have Villanova, Florida, SMU, Duke. Who you like
yep.
in that Villanova, Florida matchup? Florida has – now, again, Florida – Villanova is susceptible to some sides. Florida
mm-hmm.
lost one of their bigger players. That would hurt them in this matchup, or otherwise, I think this would be a dangerous matchup for Villanova. But I have to take Villanova's experience, and Josh Hart will be the best player on the floor.
Yeah, I agree with you. Josh Hart's the best player on the floor. He's going to be the best player on the floor in this game. And, you know, he's up for the Witten Award or something like that. And I think he's going to play big in this game. I have Nova beating Florida as well. I think you're going to have to, you know, you want to see Chris Jenkins, you know, you want to obviously see him step up. My question just for Villanova in general is that in this tournament is who's going to step up for them? You know, we saw Phil Booth last year come up in the clutch many a time for him off the bench. Who's going to be that guy this year? Is it going to be DiVincenzo, or is it going to be Mikal Bridges? Who is going to be that next guy to step up? Because we know Josh Hart's going to do his thing. We know Jalen Brunson is going to, you know, be able to drive and get people where they need to be, and Chris Jenkins are going to do something. But who's going to step up? Will it be Bridges? Will it be DiVincenzo? Will it be Darryl Reynolds? So who's going to be that next guy? But I think I have no good people for it, just like you.
SMU Duke should be, if it gets to that, I have SMU Duke. If it gets to that, should be a very entertaining game. A lot of people are high on this SMU team. But, again, I just watched Duke just go through the ACC, probably one of the more impressive runs that a team has ever had, considering four games, against and three ranked opponents. Do you worry about fatigue for Duke? That's a lot of games and a lot of days. They're not that deep. Are you concerned at all about that? About them, you know, being tired?
Not really. I mean, like you said, the depth is a problem because they have been kind of like walking wounded this season, and that kind of hurt them. And it was kind of a part of their why they had the start that they had this season. But I don't think it should be a problem, especially if they can get past Troy with no problem. You know, get the game over by the second half, early in the second half, late first, be fine. The test is going to be Marquette. If Marquette gives them a fight and makes them sweat it out, then we can see the fatigue factor coming into play, because that's the meal, like we said. You know, they are a hard-nosed bunch. They're going to D it up all 40 minutes against you. So fatigue shouldn't be a problem if they handle their business.
So the regional final that everybody is going to be looking forward to, Villanova, Duke, I'm sure Villanova was not thrilled that they were the number one overall seed. They had probably, to me right now, the toughest number two seed. I know Duke wasn't ranked as the toughest number two seed, but I think right now, they're clearly the best number two seed in terms of how they're playing, and also in terms of having the best talent when you talk about those four players they have that can do so many things. Who are you liking this game to get to the Final Four?
Tough question. I might be biased when I give my answer, but I like Villanova in this matchup. I just like how they play. And, I mean, we've seen them last year, you know, when they were in the Elite Eight, you know, taking on a team like Kansas, who was still had, you know, they had some playmakers on there, still had Frank Mason, still had Perry Ellis, Wayne Selden. They're not the same type of caliber of player as what Duke has, per se, but they were able to, you know, tough it out, grit it out, and, you know, enable to, you know, to eke out that victory to get to the Final Four. And I think that's going to be the same thing here. I think it's going to be a close game. I think, you know, you're going to see a great matchup. You know, I think we're all looking forward to Josh Hart and whoever he's defending. Is he defending Nard? Is he defending Grayson Allen? You know, we're just going to see great matches across the board. And I think the X factor in that game is going to be, I think the X factor in that game in general is going to be Tatum. What can Tatum do? can he continue to elevate his game to the next level to show that, yeah, he's going to be a top five pick in the draft? And if he elevates his game to that next level, then I think that could push, you know, Duke over. I think that will push Duke over the top against Villanova.
So you like Duke?
I like Villanova, but I'm just playing the hypothetical.
You like Villanova. Okay. You're saying, okay, Alex, you're saying if what happens if Duke is to win, then Tatum will be be the reason why they win. Okay, I got you.
Mm-hmm.
I like Villanova in this game because I think that you know, in a game like that Elite Eight game is probably the hardest, most difficult game, even more so than the Final Four, because, you know,
right,
it's the right to go to the Final Four. You make it to the Final Four, that's just like going to the World Series. I mean, that's a once in a lifetime thing. That Elite Eight game, I see the experience of Villanova. And again, I don't think Duke has the horses inside that can exploit Villanova
mm-hmm.
on the backboard and what happens. If I'm Villanova, I'm very comfortable with Emile Jefferson and Harry Giles getting post touches. Like I'll live with that all night long. Like,
right,
that's fine. You know, you want to throw guys in the post, be my guest. Which Duke will not do, because that's not how they play. But I think, you know, I could see if Josh Hart matching up with Jason Tatum, and really, this is where I think Josh Hart really will show. I probably would go with Lorenzo Ball as player of the year, because I think he's the best player in the country. But in terms of intangibles and leadership and things of that nature, I don't think there's a better player in college basketball other than Josh Hart. So I think this is a Josh Hart game where I can see him taking Tatum out of the game and really limiting his production. I definitely could see that. So I'll go a close. It'll be a classic. It definitely will be a classic, but I'll give a slight edge to Villanova. But again, either way, I can see definitely without question, see Duke. I mean, Duke can win the whole thing. But I think that experience factor will rule out in terms of that particular game. So that's the East bracket. We move to the West. Probably the weakest out of the four brackets is the West bracket to me, in my opinion, when I look at these this bracket. Though some good teams from 1 through 5 in terms of seeds, but Gonzaga really has a nice path here. Let's assume Gonzaga in the second round. Northwestern, Vanderbilt, Northwestern making their first appearance in the history of their existence. Congratulations to, of course, Chris Collins on doing that. Amazing that, you know, first time they were the only Power 5 team never to make the NCAA tournament. So who you like, Northwestern or Vanderbilt? Will Northwestern be just happy to make it against a Vanderbilt team that had a pretty good year in the SEC this year?
I like Vanderbilt in this game, and I think it's because they're, you know, like Northwestern struggled, and, you know, they might have that feeling like, we're glad to be here, we finally made it, let's see what we do, we'll see what happens. And the Big Ten, to be honest, the Big Ten was kind of down this year, in my opinion, and I like the way how Vanderbilt played it. Vanderbilt's a battle-tested team. They're led by Luke Kornet, who, you know, a lot of people, he was, you know, he's a draftable NBA prospect. And, you know, last 10 games, they were 7-3, 2 wins against Florida. They beat South Carolina. They should have beat Kentucky, and they just learned how to close out the game and not allow that comeback to happen. And that's a learning experience that they can take into the tournament. So I like that. And I think for Vanderbilt to win this game, I think Luke Kornet has to be a playmaker. In Saturday's loss against Arkansas, he really wasn't a factor. Only had 6 points and 8 rebounds in 26 minutes. He needs to be a factor for them to win. If he plays his game, then they should not have a problem against Northwestern.
I'll take Vanderbilt again. Northwestern, not the tournament experience. I agree with you. That is a sense of happy to be here and how much energy they had to expend just to get into the tournament, just mentally, even though having the first week off. So I'll lean towards Vanderbilt. Wouldn't be surprised either way. It is an 8-9 game, but I think Vanderbilt overall is probably a slightly better team as well. Gonzaga, Vanderbilt. How about Notre Dame, Princeton? Any chance for an upset with Princeton against Notre Dame?
Nah, I got Notre Dame. I watched Princeton play against Penn in the first round of the Ivy League tournament, and Penn gave them all they could handle because they just Princeton's shots weren't falling.
Should have
were not falling for them. Yeah, they should have.
Yeah,
no doubt.
Penn should have beat them. Yeah, I have Notre Dame winning that game rather easily. I really like this Notre Dame team. They're trying to make a third straight Elite Eight appearance. A lot of experience on that
mm-hmm.
team. West Virginia Bucknell. We know West Virginia can be shaky this time of year in terms of the NCAA tournament. Do you expect Bucknell to give them any trouble or any resistance?
Nah, I think Bob Huggins in that defense just clamps down and they just do their thing and just roll on.
So Final Four up on that part of the bracket, or we'll move down to Maryland. Maryland Xavier, quiet Maryland team this year. Maybe a year or two removed from being a top 10, top 15 teams. They kind of went about their business this year. Really didn't have any bad losses, but didn't have any wins that blew you away. But it was a solid team. How would you like to come with a potential matchup against Florida State? I'm assuming you have Florida State over Florida Gulf Coast, even though there are a couple who are calling for that possible upset.
Yeah, I have Maryland taking on Florida State as well. I don't know where everybody's getting Dunk City over Florida State. I don't know where people are getting that
but
hey.
Yeah, they have those flashbacks. That team was a better team. That team was better, like, I think that was like, 4 or 5 years ago. This team is not a
yeah.
quarterback team.
No, not at all. That team, I think they had an NBA player on there.
Yeah, they did. I have Maryland taking on Florida State. St. Mary's VCU. St. Mary's had a very good year. Finished second to Gonzaga in terms of that West Coast Conference. Let's move Arizona along. This is not a vintage VCU team in the mold of the Shaka Smart teams in the past.
Nope.
Had a pretty good year. What do you expect out of that St. Mary's VCU game?
I think VCU is going to have a tough time, and I saw this just when they were taking on Rhode Island and ate them. Like I said, this is not the same team. They can still clamp down on defense, but off where they're going to get it from. I mean, we know Jaquan Lewis is going to give you everything he got, but who's going to step up? Spurge is going to step up. Are you going to get something from, you know, Samir Dowdy? Can he provide you something off the bench? You just don't know where the offense is going to come from. And that's going to be tough when you're going up against the Buzzsaws and St. Mary's, who, you know, they've been pretty good this season as well. I mean, out of conference, defeated Nevada, Dayton. 8-2 in their last 10. The last two losses happened against Gonzaga. So I mean, and they clamped down on defense. DC's going against a well balanced team, and I just like St. Mary's.
So we have Gonzaga, Vanderbilt, Notre Dame, West Virginia. Who do you like, Gonzaga, Vanderbilt?
I like the Zags. I think this is another consistent team. They're complete. I think they're going to get the job done. Yeah, I think the game won't be close. I give it probably a 10-point, maybe 10-point to 20-point spread, maybe that Gonzaga goes away and beats Vanderbilt. But I like the Zags to move on.
Yeah, they have a nice bracket. They really do have a nice bracket to get to the Elite Eight. I'm comparing what they have versus some of these other top teams, and it's almost like the committee just was like, hey, we're trying to get you to the Final Four this year.
Right.
West Virginia, Notre Dame should be an interesting matchup. A great defensive team versus a prolific and efficient offensive team. Mike Bray's teams always play tough in this tournament. Bob Huggins' teams have had struggles in the tournament getting to the second weekend outside of 2010 when they made it to the Final Four. What are your thoughts on this game in terms of the contrast of styles?
I like Notre Dame. I like offense to prevail in this game. I mean, this team been there, done that before. I mean, They were in it last year, and I think they got beat by Stephen F. Austin last year in the tournament, if I'm not mistaken. They got beat by mid-major. So I don't, or did they? Or was it the other way around? It was one of the two ways. And I just think that their offense is just going to prevail. I mean, you still got a guy like DJ Beecham who can get you buckets. Steve Astoria, he can get you buckets as well. That can help. They have shooters and those two guys that can help break that West Virginia press on defense. So I like Notre Dame to move on against West Virginia.
Yeah, I like Notre Dame. I really like Notre Dame a lot. I watch them, of course, a lot with them playing the ACC. Efficient, smart, extremely well-coached team. Bray's done an excellent job at revitalizing that because he got there. Of course, he's a disciple of Mike Krzyzewski, as we all know. Done a tremendous job with that team. How about Maryland, Florida State?
This was sort of a tough one, but not really for me. Like you said, a quiet year for Maryland, a quiet year for Melo Trimble in general, very quiet year from the Terp. I think their season comes to an end against a good Florida State team. I mean, Dwayne Bacon, you know, has taken his game to another level, and then he's playing next to a potential top 10 pick in Jonathan Isaac. I think John Isaac is going to cause problems for Maryland, so I like Florida State to move on.
Yeah, I like Florida State as well. They have, that team is loaded with talent. I mean, athleticism. They have big men. They little inconsistent. They had a stretch in the middle in the season where they played like six or seven straight ranked opponents, and they were like 4-1, 5-1, or 5-2, something like that. Had a great record in that stretch. It seems like that kind of took the wind out of their sails after that. I got a sense that kind of hurt them as far as just trying to get up for those hot, you know, for those all those matchups. But we know that they are extremely dangerous. And on any given night, could beat any team on any given night. So I like them to take on Arizona, Gonzaga, Notre Dame. How about Gonzaga? And I'm assuming you're taking Arizona over VCU.
Yep, I got Arizona over St. Mary's. I'm pushing them along.
St. Mary's, okay, St. Mary's. So how about Gonzaga, Notre Dame?
Again, I got to go with the Zags. Like you said, the committee set them up with a nice bracket to just push them along to the Final Four. They just lined them up. They said, Nova, Kansas, UNC, good luck getting to yours. We're going to push the Zags along. I think the Zags beat Notre Dame, but I think that game is going to be really fun. I think that's going to be a really good game to watch. Like you said, a team like Notre Dame, who's, you know, efficient, smart, you know, could put the ball in the basket against another team in Gonzaga, who's well-balanced as well. I think that's going to be a fun game that's going to come down, I think, for the last 2 to 3 minutes in the second half. So I like Gonzaga to move on.
I'm taking Notre Dame. I think,
wow.
This will be the first number one to me, the first number one that will fall in our brackets. I think that again, I like Gonzaga. I respect Few as a great coach, not a good coach, a great coach in terms of how he's built that program for the last 19, 20 years. But I got to see it to believe it as far as them making a run to making the Final Four. They will not have a better chance now this year than they'll have a better chance this year than they have in any particular year they've had in the past. But To me, the worst nightmare for them is a team like a Notre Dame that, you know, has guards, veteran players, guys that can shoot, guys that can make basketball plays. Like, Notre Dame is not a great athletic, not a very highly athletic team, but to me, they are a highly skilled team with a high IQ. And to me, that type of team is very dangerous. Like, what they lack in athleticism and size, they make up for intelligence and just knowing how to play with each other. I really like this Notre Dame team, and I like them to upset Gonzaga, which I think will be a high scoring game, to be honest with you.
I like it. I like that. I like that pick.
So that's my first upset. That's my first real big upset. Florida State, Arizona should be an interesting game. A lot of athletic talent on that floor between those two teams.
Yep. Yeah, I think NBA scouts are going to be drooling at this game with all the athleticism.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah, that'll be, No question. No question about it. Who you like?
Dwayne Bacon, Isaac. I like Arizona in this game. They're starting to catch fire and really play well with Alonzo Trier, getting him back in the fold. You know, Laurie Markkanen and what he's able to do, and you know they're just a really solid team. And I like them to move on. I mean, they played in the Pac-12 with a few couple of tough teams in Oregon and Oregon and UCLA, and they were able to hold their own. Yep. So I like Arizona to move on. I think, like you said, it's going to be an athletic, fun game. I think up and down is going to be something that scouts are going to be like, oh my God, look at Markkanen and look at Isaac, how they battle against each other. But Arizona pulled away.
Yeah, that team, you know, earlier this year, Sean Miller gets great talent. We know Arizona can recruit with anybody, but I saw them. Probably their first game of the season, or maybe it was in November against Michigan State in one of those opening season type games, and they don't look like the same team. They won the game against Michigan State, but it was an ugly game. They got guys healthy. They got guys. The Fryer got him back. Markin is playing great. He's a pro. We all know that. That team, there are a lot of people that's picking Arizona to win the entire thing. 20th anniversary, of course, when they made that remarkable run, still one of the greatest runs in the history of the NCAA when they went through Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky all in one tournament. So I like Arizona to get past Florida State. Should be, like you said, a high-scoring, exciting game, a lot of athleticism. Arizona, I have Arizona, Notre Dame. You have Notre Dame. You have Gonzaga, Arizona. Who do you like for your bracket in terms of Gonzaga and Arizona?
This was a toss-up. This was a really tough one for me because I was researching and I see why Arizona is this good and I see why Gonzaga is good. But I went Gonzaga, but I'm open to people trying to convince me to take Arizona before I really submit my bracket. I'm open to the convention to put Arizona into the Final Four, but right now I have Gonzaga.
Arizona lost them early in the season. That was that was before. That's not the same team,
right? Exactly.
That they would be facing now. But again, they did beat them once, so they had that. We had that under their belt. I have Notre Dame beating Arizona and getting to the Final Four.
Oh my.
I think a team like Notre Dame. Yeah, I had Notre Dame in the Final Four. I think a team like Notre Dame would bother Arizona because I think, those athletic teams, they don't like to play. They want to get up and down. They want to get up and down, play the game in the 80s. They don't want to play a possession game. I can see Notre Dame turning it into a game of execution and possessions.
Right.
Notre Dame is kind of like the poor man in San Antonio Spurs. Like you're gonna have to beat them in order to somebody. They're not gonna beat themselves. You're gonna have to beat them and out execute them. That's why I think that they have an advantage over Arizona. I think the game will be close, tight. I think they'll make enough threes, and I think that they will be able to handle. Again, they'll be at a disadvantage as far as athleticism, but I think they'll be able to negate that again with their execution. And I like Notre Dame to get to the Final Four out of the West bracket. That's the bracket that I was probably going to blow up because I don't like the bracket. I'm not in love with the bracket, so that was the bracket that I probably was going to go with somebody outside of Gonzaga. I was not picking Gonzaga to come out that bracket.
I don't blame you.
I know Gonzaga has talent. A lot of people are saying this might be their best, most complete team, though I still say probably the team that could have almost beat UConn that year in 99 was still to me their best team. But that was years ago. But I gotta see it. I have to see. They have to get to the Final Four for me. I have to see it to believe it out of Gonzaga before I'm sold on Gonzaga getting to the Final Four. But again, if it doesn't happen this year, then I don't know when it's going to happen. The road is paved for them to get to a possible Final Four. They're not going to be challenged to the Sweet 16. So you have Villanova against Gonzaga. I have Villanova against Notre Dame. So either one of those matchups will definitely be looking forward to if they were to have it in the Final Four. To the Midwest bracket, Kansas, of course, is number one, deservedly so. Though I don't think it's a vintage Kansas team. I've seen better Kansas teams. This team is a solid team, very good team. Has their normal, has some normal 2 to 3 pros. We know Josh Jackson is going to be a top 5, maybe even top 3 pick. I've seen him as high as 3, even as high as 2 in some certain cases, depending on which publication you're looking at. Moving Kansas along to whoever's Central or the others, UCD. University of Cal Davis to the second round. Miami, Michigan State, not a vintage Michigan State team. A Michigan State team that for most of the season didn't even look like they were going to make the tournament. Again, I thought Tom Izzo did a tremendous job just to get this team in the tournament. Who do you like in that matchup? In that matchup of 8-9.
I like Miami. Like you said, this isn't a vintage Michigan State team. This isn't even last year. Michigan State team that was talented with Forbes and Valentine, and I got upset by Middle Tennessee State.
No, not even close.
Right. Only playmaker
close.
Right
They're
now.
Not even close. I should.
Right, and when you look at it right now on the team, your only big time playmaker is a freshman in Miles Bridges. That's all they have right now.
Right,
and I like Miami in this game just because they're battle tested. I mean, they got to the Sweet 16. Last year against Villanova, but obviously Villanova handled their business against them. But still, a very good – they're a very solid team led by Jaquan Dugan and the rest of those cats down there in Miami. And Larry Nagy is a good coach just like Izzo. But I just think, like you said, this Michigan State team, they struggled to get in. They got in. And I think this is where it growed in for them.
I actually have Michigan State winning this game. Even though I lost a ton of ACC, I have Michigan State win this game. Now, again, Larry Nagy is a tremendous coach. He really is. Anybody saw with his work at George Mason, of course, they had that run back in 2006 and before losing to Florida. So it won't be a situation where Tom Izzo blows Larry Nagy, will destroy Larry Nagy as far as coaching. That's not going to happen. But I like how Michigan State ended the season. I think Bridges will be the best player on the floor. He's going to be a Lowry pick if he comes out, and we certainly expect him to come out. So I kind of lean again. I can see either again. This game could go either way. I just probably picked this game more because I was picking Kansas to beat the winner of it, regardless. So this is kind of one of those type picks more than the exact matchup. But I'll lean towards Michigan State. Lean towards Izzo. With his tournament experience, despite what happened last year, Izzo, for the most part, his teams played well in March. And what the thing about Izzo is he takes teams that are underwhelming and they kind of a lot of times will outperform their season in the tournament. Like, he'll take a team that you thought had no business even making it to a Sweet 16 or Elite 8, and next thing you know, they're in the Sweet 16. Not saying that's going to happen this year, but Izzo, I've seen him take some teams that were not that talented and move them along in the tournament. So I'll have Kansas, Michigan State, Iowa State, Nevada. Iowa State comes off a Big 12 championship, taking out West Virginia and a couple other teams as well. Beat Kansas at Kansas, not that long winning streak that Kansas had at Allen Fieldhouse. What are your thoughts about Iowa State?
I have Iowa State winning this game. I think, like you said, they went through the gauntlet of the Big 12 during the regular season and even, win the conference tournament. They had to beat some teams to get there. They got the job done. They're led by a senior, Amonte Morris, who is a tremendous guard. And when they get it going, they can be a problem.
They can shoot. They have a three-point shooting team. They definitely can make a bunch of threes and really wreck a game with that. Purdue, Vermont, 29-5, very good year. Purdue will have one of the best players, not certainly the best player on the floor, but have one of the best players in the country in Caleb Swanigan. He'll be, again, a guy who will probably, if he's not in the Lowry, will maybe be just outside the Lowry when he comes out this year. What are your thoughts about Purdue, which kind of, you know, had a nice year in the Big Ten in terms of winning the Big Ten?
Yeah, I have Purdue winning this game as well. Like you said, Caleb Swanigan, I mean, he's a tremendous big man. I think he's averaging 18 and 12, just tremendous kind of. He kind of blew up on the scene, and you just his story, just how he got to this point is just amazing, and he's going to be a factor in that game. I don't think Vermont has the bigs to go down low in the paint with him and, you know, battle him. There won't be no Vermont Syracuse, you know, part two where TJ Sorrentine knocks down a three pointer. Won't be none of that happening. I think Purdue handles Vermont.
Creighton, Rhode Island. Unfortunate for Creighton that they lost their point guard because before that they were a legit top 15 team without question.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of they haven't been the same since. A lot of people are high on Rhode Island as a possible Sweet 16 team. I'm not sure about that, but what are your thoughts about this Creighton-Rhode Island matchup?
I like Rhode Island in this game. I love the Rams. I really love the Rams in this year's tournament. They're a very tough team. They're tough. They're fun to watch. You know, they're never out of the game. I mean, the way they handle VCU in that game on Sunday, I think they did really well. Dan Hurley. And those and the team that he's got really good, EC Matthews leading that squad. I like Rhode Island in that game because Creighton, they just been decimated by injuries. I mean,